Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. It was a sincere privilege to get a chat with Dwayne Dennison from the Jesus Lizard and Tomahawk. This interview aired on Thursday, July 16th. Enjoy. Well, hanging with us tonight is founding member of Tomahawk as well as the Jesus Lizard. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. Dwayne Dennison, man, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chuck. Nice to be here.
So you're gearing up for a pretty significant tour coming up very soon, man. Tomahawk and the Melvins, the first tour with these two bands in, I think, 23 years. Tomahawk's first tour in 13 years. How does it feel to be getting ready to hit the road for these shows?
It's exciting. I cannot lie. I've been doing this a long time, but, yeah. It's been a while since we've done Tomahawk. I did about a year ago. I think I was still doing Jesus Lizard stuff. So I've been playing locally with a local group I have, but, this is a thing. And just to be back with everybody all in one place, you know, working together on something is exciting. And then we're having the Melvins too. It's like, that's a full on rock show. So we're all really psyched.
Well, and, you know, those numbers, 23 years, 13 years are all significant, as is the fact that this year marks the 25th anniversary of the debut from Tomahawk. And it's also the first tour since you released Tonic Immobility 5 years ago. And so it just seems like there is a whole lot brewing that really makes this tour, I don't know. It's like, I know fans are ready for this tour. I imagine you got to feel the same way.
Absolutely. The Tonic Immobility came out about 5 years ago and we didn't play any shows. It was kind of post COVID and everyone was still kind of recovering and getting caught up on other things. So it's almost like having a new album in that, you know, we've never played any of those songs live. So we'll be doing a lot of that. And that's always challenging and adds excitement, you know, from a musician's standpoint, absolutely. Getting up there and playing fresh material that's what you live for. That's the best thing in the world. Mike wasn't playing for a while and he was kind of like, you know, going through stuff. And so he's been coming back. He came through town with that Avett Patton thing.
Yeah.
And sounded great and looked great. And everybody was thrilled to see him. And so I was like, good. Thank you, Mike. You've kind of set the table for this.
So it feels like, yeah, like he's active. You've been active. Like it's time to get Tomahawk going.
That's right.
Yeah. So as you guys have been prepping and talking about this, and obviously, I mean, we're very close to the tour kicking off on July 18th. Are you talking about broader things too, like new music from Tomahawk, or is the focus kind of just on these shows?
No, not really. I think we're all kind of, we feel like we've got our hands full. You know, everybody has to practice on their own and then we get together and rehearse, you know, as a group. And just, so there's quite a bit, there's a lot to be sort of gotten up to speed and coordinated to make this all happen. So it's kind of like, we're just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, man. Well, you know, I had mentioned that this year marks the 25th anniversary of that self-titled debut from Tomahawk. What runs through your head when you think about that album, putting that album together 25 years ago?
What? It's funny. Lots of things. I mean, that was just like another lifetime ago. That was like a complete generation ago.
Yeah.
And that, so many things. That album came out, for one thing, on the heels of 9/11. And so everyone was kind of up in the air. Everything was very uncertain and everyone was sort of,
right. Cause it was near the end of October, right? When it came out.
Yeah. We had to push it back because 9/11 delayed, made things problematic in New York City. So there was that was weighing heavily on people's minds, you know, suddenly America seemed, we weren't impervious to assault anymore. Like we were part of, you know, terrorism came home to this country.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a big thing on people's minds, bigger than somebody's album coming out. So there was that. But at the same time, it's funny, the rehearsal space that I share now that I've had for the past few years is the same one that we first rehearsed in 25 years ago. And so every time I'm there, I think about that. And I've had the other guys one at a time, like John Stanier, the drummer, came through town a couple months ago and him and I worked on this. And then Patton had a couple days off after the Avett the Avid Patent Tour. And during that, he stayed and we went to that practice space to kind of do some preliminary work. And I said, Mike, you know, this is where we had our first rehearsals before we made that first album, this very room, 25 years ago plus. So all of those things are always on my mind. It never leaves. I don't mind. It's just, it's interesting to me. You know, you go through things in your life and you think for whatever reason, sometimes you think you're done. You're kind of like, well, that part of me is done. And now I move on to these other things. But so these things keep coming back with me, whether it's the Jesus Lizard or Tomahawk or who knows what. Yeah. So it's interesting. So I just take it as it comes.
I love that, man. Well, so you and Mike, I mean, yeah, so the album came out in 01, but you guys had first met in 99. Was that the first time that you guys had actually met and talked and caught up?
Face to face, yeah. It was here. It's funny, Nashville, I live in Nashville, and so this, everything seems to come back to here. Like, I met him at a Mr. Bungle show here in Nashville. A couple guys took me. I probably would have met him eventually anyway. My wife already knew him, but I don't think we were married yet. We weren't. We would have met up eventually, but he was aware of me and he was aware of things I'd done. And I was very much aware of him and things we had done. And so we talked then that very day. He told me he was starting a label and stay in touch. And then the first album, the first rehearsals were here. And you know, we're launching the tour from here. We're going to rehearse here again and then kind of go. So it's funny how old Music City seems to be the hub.
Yeah. I mean, did you and Mike, did you guys hit it off pretty quickly when you met that first time face to face?
Yeah, I was absolutely flabbergasted by, I was down here. I had just moved here a few months before and I was playing with Hank Williams III. So right. I was fully immersed in country music, country guitar world, and just focusing on that, like with blinders on. And then we go to see Mr. Bungle, who were touring that album, California, which is to me a great, astonishing, diverse, eclectic, weird, high energy album. And I was sort of floored by it because I had been focusing on this other more simple, straightforward things. And we didn't talk that long, but we hit it off. And he was familiar with not just the Jesus Lizard, but the Dennison Kimball Trio, like a side project I had that was sort of a jazzy, vaguely, I don't know, experimental lounge kind of music. And he was very much up on that. And yeah. I was familiar with things he had done, even on one-offs, like with Melt Banana and things like that. So, we had mutual friends. And one of the things about Mike is, unlike most of the rock singers I've met, I mean, he's extremely up on all different things of music. You can talk about composers. You can talk about whether it's John Cage and Charles Ives or Ligeti or Busoni. And he'll know what you're talking about. And I don't run into too many rock singers who can do that.
Yeah.
You know, so we hit it off immediately. And when I said, hey, I stole this riff, I kind of took it from, there's even on the new Tonic Immobility, Italian composer. Ah, I can't think of his name. I said, you know, I cribbed this from so-and-so. And he'll go, yeah, I know. I heard it.
That's hilarious. That's good, man. So, you know, I love hearing that because, yeah, it sounds like you guys hit it off and just connected in a unique way. But there's a moment where it moves on from connecting to actually being like, hey, we could make music together. Did that come pretty quickly too?
I started making very basic demos, like acoustic guitar and a metronome with a cassette. That's it. And just sending bass, the most stripped down ideas we could. And he responded well to that. With Mike and I, there's always a little bit of creative friction there. I tend to be more minimalist. He tends to be more maximalist. So I feel like I have to pull him in from time to time. And I think he feels like he needs to push me up from time to time. So we do butt heads about things, but, you know, any working relationship, I think you take turns getting your way.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So there you go.
Did you, and I guess not did you, but also do you, did you approach kind of that minimalist music or that, you know, that initial sort of the demos similar to how you had approached Jesus Lizard, or were you trying to really separate yourself from that?
No, I pretty much the same way I always do, just come up with things and then share them. With the Jesus Lizard, it was much more immediate. We were all in the same town. I mean, we were all practically in the same room for years. I mean, we all lived in the same place for years. And then one at a time, we slowly spread out. But it was always pretty easy. I mean, you couldn't come up with anything without somebody hearing it. Somebody like, hey, I heard you doing that earlier today. What was that? You know, and like, okay. Whereas with Tomahawk, everyone lived in different places. So I would start with Mike and make a batch and just send it. What do you think of this? And it's like, yeah, this, great. Not so sure about this one, whatever. But no, I didn't change the approach at all.
No, that's interesting, man.
It's funny, Chuck, one more thing. I thought I might have to. So like Dave, as far as vocalist, David Yao is a classic to me, punk rock vocalist.
Yeah.
The things he does, his way he is on stage, and Mike is more like a singer. And I thought, to my ear, I couldn't tell if Mike was a trained singer or not, and he isn't. He was self-taught. But I thought, I remember asking him, were you into musical theater? And he's like, no, no. And I started listening to more. I thought, well, gee, if I'm going to write for Patton, I got to listen to more, I don't know, like musicals. So, and then he's like, no, and then I started playing in bands like in high school. And that's that.
That's funny, man. So going back for you, man, you know, you studied guitar in college, right? Classical guitar. Did you grow up in music? Like, was that always something that was part of your life that you wanted to pursue?
Almost always. We had we were pretty normal middle class Midwestern family, and we had a piano in the house, like not a grand piano, just like a upright. And both my parents played it. My mom read music and my dad played by ear and sang. And so there was somebody always doing something. We were encouraged to take lessons in that. So we did, because I saw them do it. So I wanted to do it too. Gradually, guitar showed up in the house through my sister, the local YMCA, taking lessons. And I would just take her book when she wasn't using it, which was most of the time. And I would learn how to play. And then like a lot of kids, I think when I became a teenager, so I already could read music. I already knew basics about music. And then I started playing in bands and putting bands together, right? Just nobody had any ideas about becoming a recording artist. We just wanted to play out. They had youth centers and teen dances and playing at the high school dance. We did that. We did all those things. And that's kind of where it started. Because in those days, this is a long time ago, in those days, if you wanted to play a show, you had to you played the whole show. You had to have three sets worth of material. All right. So I was the one who always got stuck with figuring the stuff out, right? I'm the guy who sat down with the albums and figured it out, whether it was Robin Trower or Foghat or, you know, the 70s, whatever the set, Montrose, the 70s rock of the day. But then I started figuring out that a lot of those songs had similarities. They weren't, it was just, this is the same chords. It's just in a different key, or this is a little different rhythm. So I started writing literally just to take up time, so I didn't have to spend so much time figuring out other people's stuff. And the stuff I wrote was similar enough to the other people's that you couldn't tell, right? Nobody cares. You're at the school dance. You just want to dance with whoever and then sneak out to the parking lot and have a drink and come back. And, you know, so if we're throwing in original tunes, nobody cared.
Yeah.
Either way. And honest to God, that's how it started. And then the punk rock, underground, new wave, whatever you want to call it, world came along, and suddenly it was all about original music, right?
Right.
And so I already had it kind of going.
So what were some of those early punk bands that really kind of cracked that open for you?
For me personally, it was more the second wave of bands, because they were more interesting and a little more sophisticated. So of course, what's kicked it off? Well, I grew up in the Detroit area, so I mean, Iggy Pop, Iggy, the Stooges and Iggy, but Iggy, those first two albums he did with Bowie, The Idiot and Lost for Life, had a huge impact. And I saw him play, you know, when I was fairly young. My sister saw the Stooges play like one of their last shows. So Iggy started it, I feel, as far as in that area. But of course, you couldn't ignore the Pistols, that, you know, the only album they ever did. Absolutely phenomenal. Still sounds great.
Yep.
The Ramones were happening. A lot of my friends were into it. I kind of had mixed feelings. It just kind of, it was too much of the same thing all the time. But to me, the second wave, especially of the English stuff that started coming through, was a little more sophisticated and artsy. The guitar work, whether it was Magazine or Susie and the Banshees or Gang of Four or even Bauhaus or Killing Joke. And then in America, it seems like there was art, sort of weird bands like Pure Ubu. So I started, that got me into it. And then the next wave was in the U.S. And to me, like what people started calling noise rock, whether it was Sonic Youth and Butthole Surfers and Big Black and things like, suddenly I was like, okay, I think I found my spot.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Texas and I got to know some of those people. And then Scratch Acid, I met the guys and all this. And then that's kind of one thing led to another.
Yeah. And then you moved to Chicago and that's where that friendship with Albini came, right?
Yeah. And then he kind of produced and he was a big part of our first few albums. Absolutely. Yeah. And I seem to be always a little bit ahead of the curve. It's not like I was trying but as far as going to the places where things were happening, I moved to Austin right before that kind of exploded in its way. And then we all went to Chicago and that became an epicenter.
Yeah.
It was interesting in the 90s in that the epicenters of American music, it wasn't just New York and LA anymore, which is traditionally what it's always, it was Chicago and Seattle and other, maybe Texas and other places. Athens, Georgia.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and then you moved to Nashville, right? And then they all followed me too. Yeah.
And then Kings of Leon move here, and then Jack White moves here, and then the Black Keys move here. Everybody's following me. I'm always setting the trends.
That's it. I love it, man. Well, so, you know, talking about the Jesus Lizard, the latest album, Rack, came out in 24. Are you thinking about new music from that band right now, or
no?
You seem like when you have something ahead of you, you focus on that, and everything else kind of has to take a break.
I kind of have to. Well, Tomahawk is a hard focus too, because we've got so much material to cover. There's a lot of different stuff. Just the playing wise, there's lots of different things I have to do, and I'm definitely more of a pedal jockey than with the other bands. And I change tunings between songs and I've kind of got a lot. And Mike always wants to do covers. He always wants to do weird country covers or whatever. So it's a hard focus, but yeah, I like to do it that way. I think it's just better for everyone, really.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And it is weird because you have this 25th anniversary of the debut album, but also this album that's 5 years old that you've never played before. And so,
yeah,
it's going to be a really interesting balance.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a lot of material to cover. Yeah. And so we're going to have to get it together fast and then narrow it down. But we've kind of always operated this way and it always seems to work. I can overthink things sometimes and worry about things. And well, just yesterday I was texting back and forth with Patton literally last night and he's suggesting, hey, what about doing this song? What about doing this? What about doing this? I'm like, Mike, we already got like 28 songs of our own we got to do. And I'm like, I'll hit it tomorrow. Well, while I was waiting to do this, I just ran through. One was a Duane Eddy song. One was a Joy. I nailed him the first time. I listened to it a couple times and then, okay, Duane, he's playing an F. I'll put a capo on the first fret. There, I got it. And then the George Jones, well, there's only three chords and it kind of goes around. There, I got it. And then maybe a Commander Cody song, Hot Rod Lincoln, like, well, okay, I think there. It's like, what was I worried about?
Yeah.
In 20 minutes, I just learned three songs and whatever.
It's like you're back in those bands in high school, man. You're going through the albums, figuring out what to play.
I still am. Yes, I still am.
I love it. Duane Dennison, man, thank you so much for hanging tonight. I've been a big fan of Tomahawk, and I'm really hoping I can pull off one of these shows with the Melvins. Listeners, follow Tomahawk on social media, get details on the tour, get your hands on tickets for the shows that aren't sold out yet at ipecac.com. And Duane, man, thank you again for being here. I know this is our first time catching up. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I hope so. Hope to see you again. And if you come up to one of the shows, please say hello.
That That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights On Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.